basketball fans, and welcome to another Hoops HD preseason video podcast. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, streaming to you live from the heart of Big Ten country here in southern New Jersey. Joined this evening for our preview of the American Athletic Conference by some of our cast of characters from prior podcasts. Joby cannot be with us tonight, but we do have both of our Johns. First of all, John Titel. John, how are you doing doing there down in D.C. tonight?
8 days away from the start of the season. I'm doing fantastic.
8 more days, thanks, Friday the 13th coming up, and it's going to be one of the best Friday the 13th we've had in a while. Also with us is our other John, John S., coming to us with a Cincinnati Bengals jersey on there. The wrong sports going on, I think.
Yep, but they're still 7-0, so we still have to rep our hometown team here.
And finally, we have with us as well David Griggs. I think he's already into the alcohol. David, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Yeah, 8 more days. Some of these exhibitions just aren't doing it for me. If you missed St. John's exhibition the other night, that's okay. So did the Johnnies. They just weren't there. It was a pathetic showing. American Conference, I like this league because if you love ranked teams, this is your conference. And if you love sub-300 teams, this is your conference.
We've got a little bit of good basketball and a little bit of bad basketball and maybe a little bit of somewhere in between in this conference, I think. But let's start, before we get into the actual team previews, with the biggest offseason news in the American Athletic Conference coming to us out of Dallas, where SMU, who preseason before the news came out was looking like an NCAA tournament team again, is not going to be an NCAA tournament team. David, will you fill us in a little bit on what happened down in Dallas?
Well, I guess what they really got hit with was failure to monitor the specifics, as I understand it. And again, every time I call and ask them what the hell happened, they just hang up on me. I don't understand why that is. But apparently, someone on the basketball staff, I believe it was an assistant coach or I don't want to misspeak, but it was someone on the staff, took an exam for a player, and that's pretty bad. But what's kind of funny about this is that, as you and I were talking off air, the person that took the exam for the player failed the exam. So it's just, I mean, Jesus, it's like you suck because you're cheating, but then you suck at cheating. It's just double layered here. But anyway, who was the player in question? I don't like the. But
the player in question, my understanding, was Keith Frazier, who I believe will be playing this year. He was the player that was the subject of the investigation. He has denied any wrongdoing. But the NCAA did hand down a postseason ban this year, a 9-game suspension for Coach Larry Brown, and a variety of other penalties. The suspension of Larry Brown and the postseason ban that SMU has announced, they are not going to appeal. A lot of the other penalties they are appealing, including scholarship restrictions and the like. And let me throw it over to John T. Does that surprise you that they did not appeal the postseason ban?
A little bit, especially if this team, which is as loaded as it appears with guys, let's forget Frazier, Jordan Tolbert transferring in, Marcus Kennedy Sr., Nick Moore Sr., like this team is built to win now. So part of me thought they'd go for it because this is their chance, but it might be the lesser of two evils. They figure that if they challenge the postseason, they might get hit with even more painful sanctions, so they figured they would take their medicine and just try to put it past them. But yeah, I was a little surprised.
Can I say I was too, and maybe for a different reason? I thought they would appeal, even if they didn't think they could win the appeal, for the simple reason that the NCAA is so understaffed right now, especially in terms of investigators and compliance, that had they waited the full 90 days, submitted it on day 90, it would have probably been until the end of the season before the NCAA got around to examining it and making a second ruling anyway, which they could have become eligible pending the results of the appeal. Now, again, they may have gotten hit harder on the back end, but they could have been eligible this year, then Larry Brown could have retired, and then let somebody else clean up the mess, which is typically how SMU and Larry Brown operate. I don't know why they didn't do that.
Well, this would also have been a distraction early on in the season had they decided to let it string out.
I'd argue it's still going to be a distraction anyhow. I mean, they're going to be talking about it all year. And I thought what John T's point was great, that their three best players probably, Nick Moore, Marcus Kennedy, Jordan Tolbert, are all seniors this year. I just don't see this team as being able to be as good next year as I think they're going to be this year. And like David said, they could have gotten themselves eligible, at least had a shot to play in the NCAA tournament, and let these kids go out on a more positive note, I guess. But as we are, all that SMU is going to be playing for this season is a regular season championship in the American. I'm fairly certain that they're not going to be allowed to play in the American Conference tournament. I'm not certain if that was officially announced yet or not. Wouldn't make much sense to let them play and potentially have issues with who gets your automatic bid. But
that means the Polyester Bowl is going to be their final game against Cincinnati this year.
Question, do we ever hear from SMU again, or is it going to be like a Fresno State situation, or I don't want to say Drake because that had nothing to do with it. Is it just going to be one of those teams that we look back and remember, oh yeah, remember those 1 or 2 years where SMU was good? Or are they going to have staying power, or is this basically shows over, you know, much like when Tony Bennett left Wazoo? And, I mean, are they just going to go away now?
John, you're kind of shaking your head. You think they're going to stick around?
I think they will stick around, but I think it hugely depends on the coach they hire. I don't think Brown, who's won in titles and been a National Coach of the Year, and that you bring in a McDonald's All-American and Keith Frazier, point guard Nick Moore, who is the 2015 Conference Player of the Year, transfers from a power conference like Jordan Tolbert, who came from Texas Tech. It's not a coincidence. Larry Brown elevated this program. If they bring in a no-name coach who can't bring something to the table, it's going to take a downward turn in Mustang land. If they can bring in someone who can keep recruiting good guys and bringing in good guys, I think they'll be okay.
Well, do you think SMU is enough of a destination that a big-name coach would really that may have a choice of places? Let me just throw a name out there, like a guy like an Archie Miller. Would he go to a place like SMU? Is it that appetizing? And, well, does SMU have the commitment for what you're saying there, for the money?
Everything's bigger in Texas. We'll see what the booster's paycheck look like.
Matt Driscoll, that's who I'd call, from North Florida. And, you know, because he was at Baylor, I think that he would do well there. I don't know if he'd do as well as Larry Brown, but I bet he managed to not get himself suspended for 9 games.
But not Matt Doherty back again.
No. I mean, that's what you fear if you're both North Carolina and SMU, that the NCAA sanction will be that they will reinstate Matt Doherty as coach.
Let's actually turn away from SMU now. We may discuss it briefly when we discuss the conference standings at the end of this season, but there's one team from the American that is ranked in the top 25 heading into the season, and that's the UConn Huskies, who missed out on the NCAA tournament thanks in part to the home loss to SMU. Well, thanks completely to the home loss to SMU in the AC American Championship game last season. Let me throw this over here to John S. What do you think about this UConn team this year? Do you think this is a legitimate top 25 team that's going to be back in the field?
They've got some returning talent with Rodney Purvis and also their center, who's escaping me at the moment. They also have Sterling Gibbs, who is a talented point guard at Seton Hall, who is transferring out. So he'll have 1 year of eligibility for the Huskies. And then because of their, shall we say, lack of strength of schedule in the conference this year, UConn is hooking up with games in Atlantis this year. They'll be hosting Maryland, hosting Ohio State and Hartford. They host Georgetown in February and also go to Texas. So they can't complain they weren't tested going into NCAA tournament play this year.
You mentioned Sterling Gibbs. There's also another big Sean Miller coming over from Cornell as well. Let me throw this over to John T. on this UConn team also. And, you know, the question here, I guess, is, you know, obviously Ryan Boatwright is gone, but are the new players coming in good enough to elevate this to be better than it was last year? especially given that Sterling Gibbs had maybe some personality conflicts on his last team last season.
So, first of all, I'd like to say we should refer to him as the other Sean Miller, because we all know there's only one Sean Miller in college basketball.
This is Sean, S-H-O-N-N also.
Yes, the spelling is different. Secondly, as your Ivy League basketball representative, I'm happy to report that he started his career at Cornell. He's had a really huge roller coaster. 2012 Conference Rookie of the Year, then missed the entire 2014 season with shoulder surgery, then had a great season last year before deciding to transfer, and it seems to be paying immediate dividends. On Sunday, they had an exhibition win over that legendary D2 school, Tampa. He had 18 points in his very first game, his very first exhibition. So I think he's going to make an immediate impact, which I'm a little surprised about, because as you might imagine, UConn is a national title caliber team with Kevin Ollie, and Cornell is not, but he seems to be making the leap quite well.
Right. And what about the other transfer here, though, Sterling Gibbs? How do you feel that he's going to do on this team, and do you think he's going to be able to gel in with UConn in a way that he was not able to with his teammates over at Seton Hall?
I think so. I mean, Seton Hall seems to have had a lot of problems recently retaining players, so I'm wondering if it is a player problem versus a team/coach problem. The other player I think to focus on is Daniel Hamilton. He was great as a Rookie of the Year in the AAC last year. As good as he is, he's arguably the fourth best player in his family, as he's got one brother who's playing overseas, another brother in the NBA, and a third brother at UCLA. What kind of genes are going through that family tree?
I mean, he and I, same genes, just greatness all the way around.
Really, David? What school do you play for?
Well, I had some problems gelling at the school I went to, sort of like Sterling Gibbs.
Well, David, let me keep with you here. Another team that I think most people think is going to be pretty good in the American, is not a top 25 heading into the season though, is the Cincinnati team. All five starters back, plus Mick Cronin healthy and back on the sidelines, and I think we're all glad to see that he is back and healthy again.
Yeah, that was actually very scary. I mean, we've always had some fun with Mick Cronin, especially his scheduling philosophy or lack thereof. I mean, everybody loves to go to the bakery, but God, did he like going to the bakery and loading up on cupcakes. But that really was legitimately life-threatening, and it's just very fortunate that they caught it and he's treated it, and I'm glad he's back. Cincinnati, again, they are kind of a phenomenon. We were talking about this before, but it seems like there are certain teams that always seem to finish the year much better than where they were predicted to, and I was trying to recall the last time Cincinnati even started the season ranked. I mean, they would start off unranked and barely getting any votes on either poll, and then at points in the year be ranked in the top 10. I don't know if they're going to be this good, but I do think they're one of the 25 best teams. They're very strong defensively. They have a really good front court. The one area where they've always been weak is scoring. They just can't seem to shoot the ball. They shot the ball very well in their exhibition game. Now, granted, it was a very inferior competition that was unable to guard them, but still, an effective defense against Cincinnati in the past has been leave them open and hope they miss. They probably will. They were hitting their shots. If they can shoot even mediocre for the season, they're going to be pretty dangerous. I think they're going to be pretty good. I think they're going to be right up there with UConn. I think they're going to be way inside the bubble, maybe not a protected seed, but probably a first ballot. Essentially, that's 9 seed or better. It means you're one of the original 36 into the field, for those that don't know what I mean when I say first ballot. I like them. I like them a lot. I like them every year. Coming into the year, I always feel that they're underrated, and I feel that way again this year.
Well, maybe one of the reasons why they always end up at the top 25 is that weak schedule, because we all know the top 25 voters tend to look at records a lot more than schedules, and you play a weak schedule, you're going to rack up the wins. But let me throw it over to John S., who obviously is a Cincinnati guy based on that jersey you got on right now, and you're also our schedule expert. How does it look for Cincinnati's non-conference schedule this year, and what do you think about the team itself?
Well, they do have a couple games at Brooklyn this year at Barclays. I think one was Nebraska, and another one is Tennessee. And then they also get Butler at home. They get Iowa State at home. And then they make their return trip to CentOS in December and also have a return game at VCU before they go into American Conference play.
So you say they actually scheduled this season.
They did.
Wow. I mean, not that Nebraska, Tennessee aren't going to be much of anything, but at least they're power conference schools.
Don't say that. he will crush the non-believers, I'm telling you.
Well, Nebraska did beat Cincinnati last year.
Yeah. And they beat another team, too, at some point. I forget who.
Moving on from Cincinnati, last season, for all the fun we've had with Frank Haith and whether we like him or don't like him,
we don't.
Tulsa went 14-4 in the American last season, made a top seed in the NIT, though they did not get in the NCAA tournament. All five starters are back here. Rashad Smith, Markel Curtis, James Woodard, Shaquille Harrison. Is this a tournament team this year is the question. And let me throw it over to John T. on this one.
Not only are they a tournament team, they are my sleeper in the conference. They have one of the best junior classes in the country, so I think the expectations are actually even going to be bigger next year. But I think this is a tourney team. Every starter is capable of scoring double digits. And you can get on Haith's face all you want. He was the 2012 National Coach of the Year. He's been to three NCAA tourneys. He's got a group now together. The schedule looks decent. Wichita State, Oklahoma State, Oregon State. I think Tulsa is going to the tourney.
Yeah, well, Frank Haith did an excellent job of getting out of Missouri before it fell apart and taking Danny Manning's team and having success with them. Would you agree with that, David?
Yes, some people just keep falling upwards. He did okay at Miami. He actually did have a couple good years, but they really weren't good at the end. And one of the funniest things was that when he went to Missouri, Miami agreed graciously to waive the buyout clause. And then I wonder if they helped him pack. I don't think they were sad to see him go. He got to Missouri, and yes, the first year he was there in particular, I know that they exited the tournament early, but they were a two seed and they deserved it. They were legitimately a top 10 team that year. The next year they were couldn't win on the road, and then now they can't win at home or on the road. I mean, albeit he's not there anymore, but it just seems like he always starts off. It seems like he always digresses the more he's at a place, but yet another job opens up. Tulsa was a really strong contender. Danny Manning really had them going, and I agree with John T. They should be a tournament team this year. They certainly have the personnel for it, but we'll see. I don't have the confidence in Frank Haith that some of you probably do.
I have some good news for Tulsa this year. Southeast Oklahoma State is not going to be part of their schedule this time around.
Yeah,
that is really good news for them, actually. One of their more strange losses last season that helped keep them out of the tournament.
That's kind of hard to ignore.
When we've talked the American Conference in the past, I think we've almost always had a conversation about Memphis. And John S., let me throw it over to you there. What about this Memphis team this year? What's going on here?
Well, there was one player, the name is also escaping my mind, who transferred to Virginia this year. So Shaq Goodwin, I think, is going to be their starter or star player this year.
Well, yeah, they have Goodwin. They've also got a pair of freshman brothers, the Lawsons. John T., I think you know a little bit about them.
They have Diedrich and KJ, and then they also have an assistant coach, their father, Keelon. It's nice how they all ended up on the same team. I think that Diedrich is the favorite for Rookie of the Year in the conference. Do not sleep on Jalen Adams of UConn, obviously, but I'll take the Lawsons as a package group to win the Rookie of the Year in the AAC.
Well, how about the team itself, Memphis? Do you think that Josh Pastner can get this team in the tournament, especially after the devastating offseason transfer?
No, he cannot. luckily, he has a great point guard on the roster. Unfortunately, it's his assistant coach, Damon Stoudemire. So.
Right. Damon. Well, I Gotta disagree a little bit. I think he can get them to the tournament. I was just online. Tickets are still available. If he hurries, he can buy them and they can go.
Well, let me throw another team out here from the American that I know I'm probably not going to get much agreement on, that I'm not necessarily saying they're going to be a tournament team, but I would not be surprised if they get in the bubble talk this year, and that's Kelvin Sampson's squad down in Houston.
Chad,
I know they lost 19 teams games last year, and I know that Gerard Siggers decided to go pro, but you add in Ronnie Johnson from Purdue, Damian Dotson coming in over from Oregon. They're both double-digit scorers at legitimate power conference schools. I think that may be enough for things to really start changing down here in Houston.
I thought you were going to mention Chicken Knowles once you mentioned the Cougars.
Well, you do have Chicken Knowles there. You've got as well. I got his name is slipping my mind now.
It's Houston.
This is a pattern.
LeRon Barnes on there,
by the way.
Yeah. I'm not seeing it. Okay. If it happens, all power to you. I mean, it's not nearly as crazy as your Fordham pick last year, but I'm not. I don't know. Having said that, I actually like Kelvin Sampson as a coach. I think he needs to have his cell phone taken away from him every now and then. Because again, like what it amounted to really was making way too many impermissible phone calls and then lying about it way too many times. Other than that, he's done well wherever he's been. He did very well at Oklahoma, and I think he would have done well at Indiana had he not crashed them into the mountain with his phone. But I could see him getting it going. Texas is a very rich high school basketball area. I'm a little surprised that there are just certain programs that you wonder why they can't get it going. DePaul being one, considering where they are and what their alumni base is. Houston is another. Houston should be a good program. They should be up there with Texas and some of the better programs down there. But they're not, and they seemingly never have been, at least not since the Five Slam-a-Jamma days. But I don't see it happening this year.
So I'm not getting any love with my Houston pick. Let me throw it over to John T. I know you've got some Philly roots in you, and Temple was, I think, universally agreed upon as being the biggest snub for the tournament last year. Any chance that they're going to do anything this year, or is this going to be more of a rebuilding season?
Unless assistant coach Aaron McKee has any eligibility left, I don't see the team doing anything. Their schedule is ridiculous. They could potentially play Carolina, Butler, Wisconsin, and Villanova. I mean, good luck.
Oh, well, is John Chaney back?
Well, let me throw it open out here. We've got four other teams as well in this conference: East Carolina, Central Florida, South Florida, and Tulane. Anybody else in this conference that anybody thinks is going to make any noise, or are we really just talking about the teams that we've discussed already?
As I said, with Memphis, tickets are still on sale, so they can still make it to the tournament.
Are you talking about Memphis, or are you talking about Houston?
Well, any of them. I mean, tickets are on sale now. They can. That's the only way they're getting into the tournament. Let me think here. No, I'm not really excited by too many of them.
John S., you have anybody else that you want to mention in this conference? Or
Not among those four teams.
And John T., anything else that you're looking at towards the bottom of this league here, of any note, really?
Of any note, the best nickname in the conference is junior center Chris Perry of South Florida, Skippy Walnuts.
All right. I did not know that.
Did that just make South Florida the team of the people?
Wow. I maybe have to root for South Florida now with that one.
Wow, I didn't know that one either.
All right. Well, Skippy Walnuts and his South Florida squad, I've got them picked dead last, unfortunately. Let's turn towards John T. You already mentioned who your pick for the Rookie of the Year is, the combined pick for Rookie of the Year, I guess, Lawson's 1 and 2. How about the idea of Player of the Year in this conference? Who do you think is the best player?
So I think Nick Moore, as the defending Conference Player of the Year, has to be considered the favorite. Not only did he produce in the regular season, he made 6 of 11 shots from behind the arc and racked up 24 points in their tourney loss to UCLA by a single point. Thank you, Yannick Moreira, for the goaltending. I think Moore is the odds-on favorite. Do not sleep on Hamilton, Daniel Hamilton of UConn, 2015 Conference Rookie of the Year. He's got pieces around him. He's got Amita Bryma in the middle to defend. He's got the new kid, Jalen Adams, to help run the show. He's bringing in Sean Miller. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for many people on UConn to succeed. I think Hamilton has a decent shot of being the leader.
Anybody disagree with that? I agree with him. I think we're looking at Nick Moore and Hamilton as the battle here. But John S. or David?
No, I think that was absolutely perfect.
Well, let's talk to any final thoughts on this conference, including predictions on how many teams we're seeing here. Obviously, SMU probably would have been in all our picks to make the field if they were eligible, but with them not, are we looking at 2-bid league, a 3-bid league, or 4-bid league? Let me start with you, David. And any other final thoughts on the conference?
I think it's a 3-bid league, and then I think it's a drastic drop-off after you get past Cincinnati, UConn, and Tulsa. I don't know. I'm just not really excited by anyone else minus SMU. It just seems like it's one of those things that there's a clear divide. Once you get past the third or fourth team, you're talking NIT at best and probably not even that good with the rest of the league. I don't even think Memphis is going to the NIT.
How about you, John S.?
Now that SMU is going to be out of the American tournament, I'd be surprised if it's anybody but UConn and Cincinnati ultimately playing for the American title down in Orlando this year.
John T., I think already told us he doesn't agree with that because of the Tulsa team, but let me throw it over to you, John.
thank you for making my point for me. I'm setting the over-under at 3. I think UConn is a slam dunk. I think Cincy and Tulsa might be a year away just because they're so young. There's not many seniors on either team of note, so I think both of them will make the tourney next year just to start the predictions early for the 2017 tourney, but yeah, I think Cincy, UConn, Tulsa make it a trio from the American.
And I think we're kind of unanimous on that. I agree. It's those three teams. I made my case for Houston. I'm not saying that they are by any means definitely going to be a tournament team heading into the season. They're the team that I think could be the surprise in the conference if a fourth team is going to come up there and either steal one of those spots or make a fourth bid from the conference. So on that note, what's going to happen tonight, actually, we're going to go right into – we're going to be ending this podcast, but if you click down below us in the same post that you're watching this podcast on, you'll see our next podcast. We're going to be recording in a few minutes. The Atlantic 10 is up next, and we'll talk to you again in just a few minutes.